We're back on Filter, and if I push the right button, we have Justine Gonzalez-Berg on the line with us here. Are you there, Justine?
Hi, Paul. I'm here. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure to finally have you on this show. I probably haven't seen you since before quarantine. So we can catch up with our own lives and talk about the pressing issues of the day. But I'm glad that you made it through quarantine live without COVID, with your sanity intact.
Totally. Well, more or less, but yes.
Yeah, I guess we'll give you the mental acuteness test in a little bit. Do you know what an elephant looks like?
I think I can remember. Yep.
Well, I'll have you draw one and send it to paul@kptz.org. So I know you, but maybe some of our listeners don't know who Justine Gonzalez-Berg is. Can you encapsulate yourself for us? Who are you? Who are you as a person? Why am I talking to you?
Wow, that's a big question. Well, my name is Justine Gonzalez-Berg. I had the privilege of living in Port Townsend from the ages of 11 to 16, and I ended up moving back to Port Townsend after graduating from college on the East Coast and rediscovering a sense of home here that I didn't realize I had been yearning for and missing. And I've been living here now. This is my fourth or fifth year back in Jefferson County, and have really appreciated the opportunities that have come about living in a small community, and have really formed a sense of importance around dropping into a local lifestyle and the concept that politics is everywhere. And I have always wanted to be a politically and socially engaged person, and I thought that would take me, you know, to big cities and abroad for most of my young adult life, and found actually that some of the most interesting opportunities come when you're deeply engaged in a place, and some of the most passionate advocacy comes when you actually really care about the community you're living in. And so that has kept me in Port Townsend and Jefferson County. Now I live in the county, which is a cool transition.
No, I love that, because I fully identify with that feeling of being, you know, and I don't remember where you lived before you came back to Port Townsend, but for me, I was like just in cities my whole life until I moved out here, and always, you know, tried to be politically minded and politically active. But like, you know, it always felt like you're taking on this huge weight. And sometimes, you know, all politics is local. Being able to focus in on local issues in a smaller place and really, you know, have a discernible, I mean, impact, I guess, for people who really want and need balance in life, who like, I'm a Libra, right? I need it to balance, and it never does. But like in a small town, it's almost like, okay, if you see something that needs to be changed, you go and fix that. Whereas in a city, it feels, or in a country, it feels so much more ephemeral, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a sense of understanding how the local politics works, and being able to know and meet your local government officials and have that feel tangible and accessible.
Yeah. So what city were you living in before you moved back to PT? Remind us.
I moved back to PT right after graduating from college, and I went to college in Amherst, Massachusetts, at a small liberal school called Hampshire College, that is considered the evergreen of the East Coast. It's also a design-your-own major, no grades kind of school, really fosters critical thinking and self-motivated study.
I forgot about that. I knew that. And I know Hampshire. My friend, for his freshman project, like all he had to do is, well, it wasn't all. I kind of made fun of him, but he was like, you grew a wasabi root.
That's awesome.
I'm like, that's really cool, but I want to do that. Why am I taking classes?
Well, we do actually also have to take classes.
I know.
Design independent studies, which is awesome.
Well, so then you found yourself back in Jefferson County, well, back in Port Townsend at first, and then back in Jefferson County. And did you just immediately, you know, find some activism, you know, in combination with finding work, you know, what?
It was a bit of a journey. I came back for a friend's wedding and wasn't really intending to move back here, but like I said, sort of felt this sense of home and belonging that I hadn't realized was actually a deep desire that I had. And I still wanted to pursue international politics, so I applied for and received an internship in Washington, D.C., and it was within my area of study. It was with the Institute for Palestine Studies, and then I was in D.C. over the 2016 election, and that was also when Standing Rock was happening, and I had this really powerful moment of being in this, you know, very political place, obviously the capital of American politics, and not having any community or any real sense that I would stay there long term because it was just a 3-month internship. And so when the election happened, I had this total sense of being disconnected from any kind of activism or even just community around, like, wow, what just happened? Of course, so many of us were really blindsided by that. And at the same time, meanwhile, my community here in Port Townsend and in Jefferson County were organizing a delegation to go to Standing Rock, which felt extremely important, you know, in that moment. And I sort of had the epiphany of, oh my gosh, I'm here in this quote unquote political place, but if I don't have a relationship to the place or a desire to stay here long term, then I'm not actually going to be politically active. Whereas, you know, you can be politically active in a small community. It just looks different. And that was a really strong moment of clarity for myself. So I came back in 2017 in January and was open to finding some kind of work and also engagement. And I was really fortunate to meet Toby McInerney, who is one of our mutual friends, who connected me with an effort to engage Port Townsend and really the city of Port Townsend, the city council, on forwarding a more progressive tax structure for Washington State. So I was part of the tax.
Is that the first thing
initiative.
You got? That's awesome. So the Toby's project, which I was a big fan of it. Like that was when you kind of cut your teeth in local politics.
Totally. Yes. And I knew nothing about organizing, and all of a sudden I was sort of the head of a campaign, which I didn't know at all what that meant. And Toby was an amazing ally and mentor in helping me figure out how to do a local campaign. And of course, taxes are a very boring subject, so it was a particularly difficult campaign to get off the ground. But I learned a lot about engaging with our local city councilors and trying to engage the public in, you know, in education, how to create marketing materials and educational materials. I mean, I was just totally green and not only learned a lot about, you know, inequity and inequality in Washington State and our tax structure, which has really stayed with me and is a continued area of passion, although I'm not working on it right now. But I also, got to learn a lot about how to organize in a small community.
That's rad. That's so cool. Yeah, I mean, it's all these things that just interconnect us, right? And Toby, I connected to Homeward Bound and, you know, which I don't know if I'm ready to talk about Homeward Bound yet, but I'm sure we will. But you know, what brought you? Because you, I mean, I kind of see you on here as a member of or an employee of the Jefferson Community Foundation, and so how did you eventually connect to JCF, which is a very philanthropic? Well, you describe JCF. I may do a poor job of it.
Cool. Well, first I'll just make the clarification that I don't actually work for JCF. I'm a contractor for Housing Solutions Network, which is being incubated by JCF.
Gotcha.
But it is definitely its own project and will eventually grow into hopefully its own organization. So I don't know as much about...
Filter is fake news.
Yeah.
Just kidding. But yeah, that's good to know. Okay. So it's not officially a JCF position yet, but JCF has kind of created Housing Solutions Network and you're an integral part of that right now.
Totally. I'm the network weaver for Housing Solutions Network.
That's a cool
name. And I got connected to Housing Solutions Network through Carrie Hastings, through a number of connections. I'm trying to remember, but originally it was from being on the board of Homeward Bound. I think I was recognized as somebody who was interested in housing and might have the skills to take on the position that they were looking for. So Housing Solutions Network is still a relatively young and new initiative in Jefferson County, and we're really working on spreading you know, the information about what the work is and how the work is happening, the model behind Housing Solutions Network. And it's been, you know, fostered by Jefferson Community Foundation because they really recognized that our amazing housing organizations, while they're doing wonderful, really important work, their work alone, even if they were able to do their work at full capacity, you know, is not going to be enough to really tackle the affordable housing issue. So they convened a listening session with local housing providers to understand what are the other areas that need to be improved upon for, you know, housing, for the affordable housing issue crisis really to be addressed in Jefferson County. And so that spurred a series of different meetings and sort of a clarifying of some different obstacles and ideas for how those obstacles could be addressed.
Let me ask you,
and that was the beginning of Housing Solutions Network.
And what was your relationship moving here in 2017 to finding housing and housing situations? Did you have kind of a what was that like?
It's a great question. I mean, a lot of the reason why I stayed here is because I came and immediately had a really great housing situation. Like I said, I came for a friend's wedding, and initially I was just going to be visiting for a month, and so they put me up in literally this little closet space in their house that was empty. It was kind of on the landing of a staircase. We called it the Nook, and I ended up living in the Nook for 4 months until one of the housemates moved out of the house and a room opened up. But one of my realizations early on was, oh my gosh, this is a really amazing housing opportunity. We were living in a beautiful uptown Victorian home, you know, with different housemates. And I recognize that it's really difficult to find, you know, housing arrangements that are not only beautiful and in line with my values and with really great people, you know, anywhere, but especially in Jefferson County. So I was really lucky in that sense. And then I didn't have to move out of that housing. Basically, I found a new housing situation when I wanted to move in with my partner, and I was able to leave that directly going into a new situation. But I will say that, you know, I, having lived here for my younger years and having a broad network of people, I definitely have benefited from the privilege of the word of mouth.
Yeah,
housing.
Yeah.
Housing knowledge and just...
Well, and it totally depends on when you moved here, you know, and also who you know. Like, that housing in finding a rental in Jefferson County and Port Townsend especially has gotten so much worse since I moved here in 2011, when literally I moved here with a friend and we rented a giant house in North Beach with a backyard, two separate living spaces, shared kitchen, but big house. And we paid $900 a month for that. And
wow,
it was just like a different world. But it was coming off the crash, right? It was still super close and nobody could sell their houses. Nobody wanted to buy houses. So really, like, just endless rentals. And the rentals were of amazing quality. And for, $450 a month, basically split down the middle with my friend. So, wow. You know, but for you, in your case, it's like 2017. Yeah, the market, the much harder to find a rental. But what I learned is that, like, you know, as you spend more time in PT, or if you come in with a connection, that makes all the difference, because, you know, it's all about who you know. And if you know enough people and your social network is wide enough, or you've been in the town long enough and, you know, you have a reputation for being trustworthy, I guess, like, the opportunities are going to be there. They're going to emerge because there are homeowners and investment homeowners in PT who want to keep their rents low and they have really great housing stock, and, you know, bless them for actually continuing to provide housing for lots of folks who couldn't afford to be here otherwise. They are probably in the minority at this point, though.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, it's amazing to think, fast forwarding 10 years from your experience, just, you know, I am constantly alerted to people in my social circle who are looking for housing, and, you know, I don't have any suggestions for them. It's really hard to, there seem to be fewer and fewer, like, oh, this cool spot is opening up.
Yeah.
And also I often check in on the Facebook group called Jefferson County, WA Rentals, Jefferson County WA Rentals.
Uh-huh.
And there are so, you know, it's a place for people to post either if they have a rental available or if they're looking for a rental. And it's one of the few places where you get a sense for how many people are looking and what's in their budget and what their family makeup is.
Yeah.
Because most often when you look at, you know, Craigslist or Zillow or something, you're just seeing what places are available to rent.
Right.
And a lot of rentals never even go up on those sites because of the word of mouth being so strong, and people prefer to do that, which I have recently learned is also a way to evade the Fair Housing Act, because if you, as soon as you post a rental online or in a public way, you are automatically needing to comply with fair housing laws, which of course are there to make sure that families aren't discriminated against,
right,
that people are not discriminated against based on their race or their ethnicity.
Gosh, and I never thought about that. That's so sinister, but you're totally right. Like, if as long as you don't put it on Craigslist, you can rent to whoever you want. I mean,
yeah,
technically,
you really,
yeah.
Yeah, and I see that, you know, of course I understand that a lot of landlords would be inundated with so many requests if they posted it online, but I think it really impacts, you know, who's able to access rentals, and especially, you know, the ability for somebody to say, oh, I don't want a child living here. That's a, you know, huge issue.
Right.
The Fair Housing Act says that you can't discriminate against families with children. But if that's not being broadcast. And something I also really noticed is that, yeah, there are a lot of families with children posting on that Facebook group. And there are also a lot of people with pets.
Oh, yeah.
And I've heard anecdotally that there are a lot of landlords here who don't want renters with pets, tenants with pets. And somebody pointed out to me recently that as, you know, our generation, my generation, younger generations are choosing to not have children, there's more importance placed on their pets.
Mm.
And it, you know, it becomes a deal of this animal that is your family versus, you know, your ability to find a space to rent. So,
right.
Yeah. And, you know, and then we think about home ownership opportunities, and those are even fewer. And I've just been hearing from, and maybe you have been experiencing this, I don't know, but I've definitely heard from some real estate agents and mortgage brokers are just about right now with the pandemic, like the city flight pattern is absolutely happening. And we thought in the summer we were having conversations in HSN and wondering, oh my gosh, is there going to be a big influx of people wanting to leave the cities, either because they newly are able to work remotely or because they want more space? You know, going through this experience in a city obviously was a really different thing than what we had out here in the county, where you have many beaches to walk on and all of that. And I've heard that is not some future reality, like that is happening right now. And
yeah,
you can
see
that in
it is.
Yeah. So there you go.
And it'll only get stronger. I mean, I think the only thing that can really for now hold that back from being just a full on slog is that we need that we don't actually have the strong broadband infrastructure that will fully support a mass exodus. You know, I mean, there's already places, there's places in Chimicum where it's like, if you cancel, you know, your CenturyLink or whatever, you can't get it back there because they're like out of ports, you know? So there is, you know, and the PUD has been trying to work on increasing that broadband connectivity for a while, but it's like, no, maybe we shouldn't, guys. Maybe it's good.
It's so complicated.
Yeah, right?
Because we want access, you know, for people and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I want people to move here, and I want them to feel okay to move here, as long as they're okay people. But I also want everybody who wants to stay to be able to do it. And, you know, it's like the pie in the sky right now, and sort of the impossibility of these questions. Because honestly, you can't have people move here in mass without seeing huge increases like we're seeing in the real estate prices.
Totally. And I think that's a really great point to make, Paul, just that, you know, there's so much demonizing and vilifying that's already happening in the pandemic and generally in our politics. And I don't want to feed into the like xenophobia of we don't want people to move here. And with that, there's also a strong need to recognize that when land is so valuable and when homes and even small cabins are being sold, you know, above asking price in all cash, the reality is that, you know, working people and folks who've lived here for a long time, who grew up in this county, low-income folks, families, are going to really struggle to stay here and to have security in their housing. And, you know, we're in the messy process of figuring out how to create social change that will address root causes of inequalities and will foster a place where everybody can have their needs met. And, you know, letting the market just do what the market does hasn't, you know, fostered that sort of equity that we need. And so I think it's important to hold that balance of, like, we can't just shut the doors and say nobody move here. And we also can't pretend that's going to be a solely positive impact on our community.
We're talking to Justine Gonzalez-Berg, she's a weaver of, what do you weave again?
A network, community building network.
She's a community building network weaver, working for something, an offshoot of JCF called Housing Solutions Network. She's a member of the Homeward Bound board. She's very active in affordable housing solutions in Jefferson County and trying to find them. So, I guess I want to take a sec to promote your video. I think that you had a lot to do with this video's production, right? Or the content?
Thank you. Yes. So, that was done by a volunteer group, that I was a volunteer. Actually, that was my first engagement with Housing Solutions Network, was being a volunteer on that committee, that housing action team, we call it. And that team identified the obstacle of the fact that a lot of our community members don't know that affordable housing is a crisis, and especially don't understand how it is impacting all of us and that we can all have an impact on some solutions. So we decided to create that video. We were had a wonderful anonymous donation. We thank that anonymous donor for their support in being able to hire a local filmmaker, Michael McCurdy, to create that video. And it was a collaborative effort with some of the folks who are featured in the video, as well as myself. And that has been, so basically we made that last year in the fall, and we began showing it at mostly like service clubs and community organizations. We would say, hey, can you put us on your schedule at your next meeting? We have this video to present, and we're going to host a facilitated conversation afterward, really asking participants to reflect on how affordable housing is indirectly or directly impacting them, and also what they think they could do about it, either as an individual or within that group of the organization that was being, you know, shown the video. So we reached over 400 community members through between October and June of this year. Of course, it was a lot harder to schedule things when the quarantine happened, but we were able to transition and do some online Zoom presentations. So we transitioned with the times, and a lot of people have been made aware that this is an issue through that video. And thank you for sharing it on your Facebook page. And anybody who's listening can go to housingsolutionsnetwork.org. And the Cultivating Solutions video is one of the hot links on the homepage of our website.
Awesome. Yeah, and I'm gonna share it on Facebook, on KPTZ's Facebook, in just a second. So if you haven't seen this video, go like KPTZ on Facebook and check out the video. And I think it's such an important conversation, which, you know, the pandemic is. I mean, we were talking about housing before, but I guess housing felt like, it didn't feel surmountable as an issue, but it felt less devastating and terrifying before, and somehow, even though it was completely devastating and terrifying, and somehow less so before COVID, and now it's like, wow, you know, how are we ever, I mean, is there any like light at the end of the tunnel that you're seeing for increasing our housing stocks?
Totally. Well, you know, I think that we have to think about short-term and long-term solutions, obviously. And one of the things that we're hoping can be a short-term solution is unlocking the units that already exist in this community that are sitting vacant for whatever reason, or are currently being used as vacation rentals, or units that people don't even realize are you know, nice livable units like backyard ADUs. And so we're Housing Solutions Network is offering a free training about how to become a landlord and how to be a good landlord and manage rentals, hoping to capture and educate the group of people that live in this county who have a unit right now that is currently built and ready for somebody to move in and just isn't being used for housing. The 2018 Jefferson County Comprehensive Plan cited that actually a quarter of the housing stock in Jefferson County is currently sitting vacant for a large portion of the year.
Wow.
That's a huge number of houses. And of course, we can recognize that a lot of those are owned by people who don't live here, who aren't going to see the video and who just vacation here in the summer and have that empty house. But we assume that there's also a large portion of those houses that are owned by people who live locally, and they're either being used for vacation rentals, or they're sitting vacant for other reasons, and that with some maintenance or just with some inspiration to recognize that house is actually a community asset that we really need to be able to keep people here and to have enough workers that when our businesses reopen, they'll be able to hire people, you know, who live locally. And so recognizing those as a community asset and inspiring people to learn what it means to become a landlord and a good landlord. And so that the information and the registration form for that workshop, it'll be a webinar. Of course, everything is online right now, is also on our website. It's called How to Be a Good Landlord, and we're offering two different sessions on August 18th in the evening and August 20th in the morning to try to, you know, to get as many people as possible, depending on when they're available.
Rent your house out. If you have a house in Port Townsend and you're not living in it, please, please make it a rental. Yeah. I know it's terrifying sometimes to feel like, you know, if you become a landlord, well, all the horror stories of being a landlord affect you. But we have support groups for you. We have ways to help you. And we just desperately need people to rent out their houses.
Totally.
So I think that's such a great idea, and I'm really glad you guys are pursuing that.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting. And that, again, is like, that's not a long-term solution for these problems, but it is immediate because, you know, one of the hugest barriers to housing is the cost of building new units. So being able to utilize the units that already exist is really important. And
honestly, Justine, I don't know. I haven't seen or really even been able to imagine too many long-term solutions at this point. I mean, there are some zoning changes, but even when you're developing at a smaller scale, at a tiny house scale, you know, first of all, tiny homes don't work for everybody. It doesn't work. I don't think a tiny home works for a family of four. There are all different kinds of people who need housing though. So like work for some, but it's like all these solutions they're part of a holistic solution, which maybe just doesn't actually exist in the way our country is currently incarnated.
Well, I mean, I think, again, there's not just one silver bullet. It's like it's going to take a lot of these smaller solutions. And I think a huge piece of the puzzle that's missing in Jefferson County is a housing trust. And that's where we come back to Homeward Bound, which people call it a community land trust, but I think it might be clearer to call it a housing trust.
Yeah.
But like how the Jefferson Land Trust protects land to make it permanently, you know, protected as farmland or forest, a community land trust or a housing trust protects houses and keeps them at a permanently affordable rate. And it's one of the only ways to preserve houses and take them out of the market, because, of course, the market is going to continue to increase the value of land in this area. I mean, that seems like a fair assumption to make, not only with the pandemic, but with also climate change. And we live in such a beautiful and easy to live in region in terms of, you know, climate. But being able to take those units off of the regular market and keep them as permanently affordable, either rentals or homes, is really important. And so I think that, you know, in the coming months and in the coming year, we'll need to really educate the community, we meaning the affordable housing advocates and community members who understand what a housing trust does, such as yourself, you know, to educate the community around what that is and why it's such an essential piece of the housing puzzle that right now is really missing from the landscape of of housing organizations in Jefferson County. And that is one form of a long-term solution that I have a lot of hope in. Although, of course, zoning changes, policy changes are definitely going to need to happen as well, because we can't rely on just the good efforts of private individuals to rent out their ADU. Like, that's not a long-term solution, even though it is a really critical short-term solution.
Well, so let's
both.
Let's count on having you back in a couple weeks, and let's really dig into what a community land trust or a housing trust can do for Jefferson County. Because I think it's an important conversation, and you're right. And if we maybe it is like a way we can start looking at the problem differently than we have been. But I really appreciate you coming on today and giving us the rundown. And I did share the video that Justine was a part of creating that really, I think, very well elucidates on the crisis that we've been going through actually since basically like 2015, right? 2014, 2015. We're half a decade now where it's been just unsustainable to find housing and thank you, totally. Justine. Is there any shout outs you'd like to give or places where people should go send money?
Well, I mean, again, you know, all of our local housing organizations are doing really important work, from Bayside Housing and Services to Habitat for Humanity to OLECAP to the Peninsula Housing Authority. So supporting all of those organizations, also supporting HSN, Housing Solutions Network. We're trying to confirm our long-term sustainability. And so we're also seeking support from community members and ownership of what Housing Solutions Network is. I mean, it's a network of individuals who really care about this issue, and we're mostly volunteer run. So anybody who wants to get their teeth in the game and get activated, Housing Solutions Network is a really great way to plug in and to understand the broader landscape of housing. But it's a great place to go if you want to get connected. So housingsolutionsnetwork.org is the portal. There's a lot of information on both housing, what HSN does, different ways to connect, different stories that talk about why this is an important issue, you know, personal stories on lots of different facets of affordable housing issues. So thank you so much, Paul, for having me today. And I look forward to it again in a couple weeks.
We're not going to get through all these other problems, but like, we got to keep talking about housing too and keep people up on possible solutions and how they can support. So thank you for being here, Justine. And we'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
That sounds great. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.
Bye.